seems to have a dream to open and run a bakery. But they took a chance, took the sweets to the street. Now they all have places where I'd love to eat.
Hello there, bakeroos and bakerettes. Welcome to the Rise Up Podcast. This is Mark Dick. I'm your host. I am so glad that you are here today for this podcast about bakers and bakeries. And in this case, bakery instructors as well, because my guest today is Volker Baumann, who is an amazing, amazing man, former baker, bakery owner, and longtime teacher at the Southern Alberta Institute of Technology, or SAIT, in Calgary, Alberta, where he ran the bread and pastry arts program for many years, and is just an awesome, awesome guy. So glad that you're here to listen to my talk with Volker. If you're new here, and I'll tell you, after last week's episode with Jim Williams, I think there's a lot of new people here. Thank you for coming. This is the show about bakers and bakery owners, and bakery owners of all stripes, because even though I am primarily a bread guy, there is a lot of interesting baking out there in the world, and I love it all. So we're here to talk about with bakers about just really the awesomeness that it is to make something great for the people that you serve. So about Volker, like I said, he's an awesome fella. I met him for the first time in, I think it was 2008. I took a guild class in Calgary that he taught on German baking, and it was the first time I ever made a pretzel. And it's the first time I ever made a crescent roll and bee sting cake and all this great stuff. But I'll tell you, the rye breads that we made were just fantastic. And when I opened up my own bakery a couple years after that class, I made a rye bread every day, one that he called the Kessler style rye, like a 40% rye bread. And I named it Volker's Rye after him. And then for years, people would ask, who's Volker? And so I would get to tell the story about Volker Baumann and how he taught me this loaf and how he's just an awesome fella. So I think I allude to that a little bit in the chat, but I thought I'd flesh that story out for you. And I guess the other thing I should mention, I think I talked to him a little later about owing him a beer. And that comes from Wheatstock in 2012. This is a cool story, actually. So before I went down to Wheatstock in Chicago, Euro 2012, the soccer tournament was going on at that time. And so I emailed my friend Tracy, who's Italian, and Volker, who's German, and made him a bet. Who was going to go further in the tournament? Was it going to be Italy or Germany or my team, the Dutch? And, you know, loser buys the beer kind of a thing. And by the time I got down to Wheatstock, Holland was already out of the tournament. They weren't going any further. And it was pretty clear that that the Germans were going to go the furthest. So I owed Volker a beer. And we made plans to meet up at the Guildhall gathering, you know, on the second night of the week that we were down there. The only problem was, is that day when we were in the classes, he was in one kitchen teaching a German baking class, and I was learning about how to make croissants with Philippe Lacour in the other kitchen. And it was a super hot day, and the air conditioning in the school broke down for that day. So Volker was trying to teach in, you know, 100 plus Fahrenheit kitchen. And we were trying to make croissants in this 105 degree kitchen, which was absolutely nonsense, trying to keep the butter cold and all of that stuff. So suffice to say, by the end of it, Volker wasn't in any shape to go to the Guildhall gathering, and let alone have a bunch of beer. He just needed to sleep for a bit, and I was in the same boat. And so we never did get together and share a glass. But then the crazy thing is that we haven't seen each other face to face since 2012, even though we've stayed in touch quite a bit via email and chats and stuff. So so anyways, that's my story with Volker and the beer. And if I ever do make it out to Calgary again, I owe him one big time, because he's an awesome fella. So enough of my yakking. Let's get into the conversation this week with Volker Baumann. So thank you for being part of this. I've enjoyed knowing you now for, I think, about, we first met about 10 years ago, and I always had so many questions about the things you'd done and sort of how you ended up in Calgary and that kind of thing. So I was just really curious to know, like, so where did you grow up, Volker? Where were you born?
I grew up in Germany.
Yeah.
And I took an apprenticeship there.
Okay.
As a baker. After I took business administration, which my father insisted on because I had three older brothers. They were bakers and pastry chefs who wanted to have one son academically trained. And I thought, why me? So when I finished, I enrolled into an apprenticeship for baking.
Yeah. And so your brothers were already doing this. Was your father a baker as well?
Oh, no, not at all. My father was a postmaster in a small town.
Okay.
So no, and my grandfather was the principal of a school. So no, there was no baking from that side.
Oh, okay. But your brothers got into it.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And so what, why did you want to get into that as well?
Well, when I was little, I helped my mother baking. She was an excellent baker at home.
Right.
And she made all of these German Kuchen, you know, yeast doughs with fruit fillings. And so I helped in the kitchen, or made a big mess in the kitchen. But at about age 12, I was given the opportunity to deliver bread and buns in the morning on a bicycle to, you know, local people.
Right.
And I loved the smell of the bakery. I loved to go in there. And for my daily routine, I got one Danish pastry and maybe 25 cents. But I was so looking forward to being in a bakery.
Right.
So that's where I came from.
Oh, that's awesome. And so what was apprenticing like then? What did you have to do?
Yeah, that was not very easy. As an apprentice, I worked 6 days a week. One day was school, but I worked before and after school.
Right.
And typically, days were 10, 12 hours long. I stayed with the bakery owner. They provided room and board. So room and board and $5 a week.
Wow.
So, wow.
And were you a long ways from home then when you were?
Oh, only about 20 kilometers away from home.
Okay. But I guess if you're working that much, you don't have much time to go visit anyways.
Oh, no. I went home on the weekends and the $5 just allowed me to take a train home and maybe just buy a pop or two, and that was about it.
So, yeah. Yeah.
They always said journeyman apprentice years are not master years, so they really meant that you didn't get much money.
That's right. Wow.
Hard and long hours.
Yeah. And how long was the apprenticeship?
3 years.
3 years, okay.
And so when I completed that and stayed another year, then I immigrated to Canada. I first came to Vancouver and worked at the Bistro Inn. They didn't need a baker, but I had been told maybe apply as a waiter.
Okay.
So I did. But when in the interview, when the banquet manager asked me if I had waited before, and I said yes, and he asked me where I waited, and I gave him a couple of names. And he says, "Do you know any French service?" I said, "No, my French is not too good." He killed himself laughing. He knew I'd waited before. He says, "Let me ask you again. Did you ever waited before?" I said, "No." He says, "Why did you lie?" And I told him, "My landlady told me to." Anyways, they hired me, and I started working at the Bistro Inn in Vancouver, and then eventually got a job with Super Value, which was, they had about 100 stores out in BC.
Right.
And they shipped me all the way to Whitehorse.
Oh, wow.
And so I was in Whitehorse for 6 years, working in the bakery. I met my wife there. Both of our children were born there. And we were transferred to Campbell River, then Port Alberni. Eventually, I was hired by a company out of Calgary, which was a great opportunity. And I did this for 3 years.
Right.
And then there was a small bakery that where the owner was not healthy. And so I bought the bakery actually from him while visiting him at the, in the hospital.
Oh, wow.
So it was a small 800 square foot bakery, which my wife and I owned and operated for 10 years, grew it into a fairly substantial, nice retail store. We had about six baker and pastry people and a fairly good-sized sales staff. So, and after 10 years, somebody wanted to buy the business. And after 10 years, I decided it was a good time to sell the business, not knowing what I would be doing. I was 40 years old.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that bakery was in Calgary?
Yes, it was.
Oh, okay.
And it was a very busy place. Like we had one customer, like for pastries, we had one customer on a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, they would get as many as 250 dozen fancy pastries.
Oh my goodness.
That's 3,000 pieces, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
gosh.
So, and then looking after our store, you know, what's the challenge? Work yeah. long hours.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's not an easy, not an easy operation. You know, there's rewards to it, but you put the time in for sure.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
I took every Wednesday, I went golfing. I only worked 8 hours. That was my day off. but people had the impression that I made nothing but money and golfed a lot. You know, that was the impression I gave. That was not the real truth.
Yeah, oh, for sure. Well, that was like with me when I'd work the early morning shifts. And so then when I'm, if I had to be there in the afternoon, people would say, oh, you're finally working. Good for you. It's good to see you working. And it's like, oh my gosh, it's because I'm working two shifts today.
Yeah. That was rewarding. And it had its ups and downs, like in business, everything does. And, but it was a very good experience. And I wouldn't trade it for anything.
No, for sure. For sure.
But I came out of it very good financially and thought I might retire, but I realized after 3 months that's not really going to happen.
Right.
And then a flower company phoned me and asked if I would join them in the technical service, which I did for a year. And it wasn't during that time that the idea of translating and publishing the German textbook into baking, the art and science.
Okay.
Which took about 3 years on a computer with no hard drive.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, I know. I'm certainly dating myself. Those were the days of the dinosaurs.
That's right, with just the discs.
Yeah. But it was a great success. And yeah, I'm very proud to say that, you know, we sold over 8,000 hot copy books.
That's right. I remember you showing me that book once when out in Calgary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
$100 a copy. That was quite a feat.
Yeah.
To do that. So.
Yeah. So you took the book from the original German and did all the translations, and did you have to like bring the illustrations up to date and that kind of thing as well?
They actually sent me what they call the signatures, which okay. were photos. There were about 700 photos in the book.
Yeah.
And I was so lucky to hire a company that did all the typesetting on a Mac or on a
right.
Apple computer, but on a Macintosh at the time.
Yep.
And that was revolutionary by itself at the time.
Sure.
You do the typesetting. And so they whited out or cleared out all of the German text and inserted the English text and reduced and put it back into the signature. So they were amazing. So that technology was really up to date.
Yeah.
And so that was excellent. And after 1 year at the flower company, SETA, the Southern Alberta Institute of Technology, on which I was on the advisory board, they had asked if I would be interested to come to join the team and set up an apprenticeship program, which they never had.
Okay.
And I did like this work as in technical service, but I was never home, so it was a good idea to spend time back at home. My wife was very supportive of everything, but she would like to have me at home.
Sure. Sure. That makes sense.
So I began in 1986. I started at SETA and my learning curve went straight up. Those were tough beginnings.
Oh, okay.
Because at the time I was I was 40, 41 years old. I thought I knew something about baking, and I actually thought I knew a hell of a lot about baking. And then I found out how little I really knew.
Oh, wow.
Well, because when you had to explain everything as to cause and effect,
right.
And students, those were adult students, not high school students.
Right.
And they were pretty clever, and they asked some very challenging questions, and many times I had to say, I don't have the answer for you right now, but I'll get back to you by tomorrow. I spent hours and hours in the library every night because there was no internet.
Right.
So I spent hours in the library studying every day. I arrived at the school at 6 o'clock in the morning and oftentimes didn't come home till 10.
Oh my gosh.
So, and my colleagues thought, oh, you got this nice cushy job. They had no idea. For 3 years, I spent more hours than I really care to remember.
Right.
But it was also rewarding because teaching classes for 5 hours a day, but the preparation and the planning for this was a lot greater than most people would think.
Sure, you know?
And,
sure.
And only in the 25 plus years that I was at SETA, I can recall only one time I decided to go to a hockey game at night and not prepare for my class and saying, oh, I know this, I can wing this.
Right.
Well, I tell you, I was not very good. So, you learn your lessons, you know.
That's right.
Sure. And, if you tried to pull the wool over somebody's eyes, it certainly didn't work, you know.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I guess that's the thing is, I teach tiny little classes for home bakers once in a while, right, you know. And the number of questions I get about, well, why does this happen and why does that happen is huge. I could just imagine a classroom full of, actual baking and pastry students wanting to really deep understand what's going on, and they're looking to you for all the answers.
Yeah, and I had this crazy idea of making them write essays so that they capture that they had to reflect that they really understood the material.
Right.
Now I have to also mark all of these essays and read this. But then I also learned, I began to understand why the university professors are very clever. They have the students do all the research, they read it, and they get all the information without ever having to look elsewhere, you know?
That's right.
So, and I when I was at SETA, I was fortunate to join the University of Alberta Outreach Program for Adult Education.
Okay.
And so I spent 15 years going through this program. I could only take 3 classes a year.
Right.
Besides teaching. So, but But I did watch the professors as to how they taught the material, what resonated with me.
Right.
And so that's what I would apply. You know, so I wanted to make sure that I had a good rapport with the students rather than dumping the hay and hope somebody eats it, right?
Right, yeah.
And that was really the best learning outcome for me, to watch how some of these clever professors taught their classes.
Okay.
So, it was not always the content. It was how they did it.
Sure, sure, yeah. Yeah, how they're going to get the information across and what they're going to get the students to do and that kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what has astronomy to do with baking, right?
Right.
I took the astronomy class, and that professor, he was just bouncing up and down, and he made that universe come alive like, you know, you just wanted to be there.
Sure.
And I asked him one day after class, you know, because I thought he's so enthusiastic, he must be a rookie, right?
Yeah, yep.
Yep. How long have you been teaching this class? And he says, about 20 years.
Wow.
It was so amazing that after 20 years, he still had that fire in the belly. And that's what I admired, and that's what I hope to be for myself, like to share that with the students and make it interesting and lively.
Cool. Well, I can see that from the two times I've seen you in the classroom. It's the energy comes across and the joy comes across for sure.
Yeah, you know,
I still remember that that the Guild German baking class, which has got to be like 10 years ago now, and that was an awful lot of fun.
Yeah,
for sure.
Oh, well, you have to make it fun, you know. Yeah. Besides that you're passing on some skills and knowledge, but it still has to be fun.
So does SAIT have an actual like apprenticeship program now?
Oh yeah, they did since 1986.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'm very proud to say, like, I still go back periodically to SAIT, even instruct some of the classes
right
today. But I'm so happy to see that the bar gets raised every year from the Baking Pastry Arts Program.
Oh, great.
Now such a big program. I think when I was there were maybe 4 or 5 instructors. Now it's 12.
Wow. Wow. And I know they've got a new kitchen as well that they set up a couple years back. I know it's changed a bit lately. They've expanded.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's nice to see that it's very positive, moving very in a positive direction, and it just keeps growing, and it's so much fun to go back, you know. It's
sure.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I know I've had the pleasure of working with 3 people that have gone through the program in Calgary. One came to work with me in Regina after she graduated, and two worked with, one came as a summer intern and then went back, and I think is still working there. And a third one, started with no experience at my place. And then after 3 years took the program, and now Heather's running a cupcake place in Calgary. She's managing that. So it's been really nice to see their progression, and whenever they come back to visit, you know, telling me what they're learning and blowing my mind too, because it's such a wide ranging course. Like, they're showing me the chocolate work that they're doing or the sugar work that they're doing and things that we just never did at the bakery. So it's really cool. Really cool to see.
Well, one of the things that I experienced over the last 25 years is that a lot of students or people entering the baking pastry program, they really don't come for the baking part. They come for the pastry.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And so, you know, baking is hard work. Pastry is more sexy, maybe. I don't know. But everybody, maybe it was a lot of people are influenced by the television shows, the Food Network, and all of this.
Right.
and everybody wants to be a famous pastry chef, and so we're drifting away a great deal from the baking aspect, you know, like of bread baking, and
right.
So
yep.
It's very difficult for a lot of bakeries to get students that actually do have a great variety or great background of baking skills.
Sure, sure. No, that makes a lot of sense.
So, but that's how it's shifted. Not only that, like from going back a little bit further, maybe 40, 50 years, when baking was at one point a totally male-dominated industry, today it's guaranteed mostly female-dominated.
Right.
So that has shifted completely.
Right. Yeah. Even on the bread side, I've found like
for sure.
People I've talked to. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. There's an awful lot of female bread bakers now and bakery owners and stuff, which is pretty neat. What do you see as baking or are bakeries still popular in your mind? Like, do you see a lot of people when you were teaching going through the program and then working in smaller shops, or is it getting more still kind of more corporate or more big production?
Yes, and that's a very good question. And I'm sure that many of the suppliers asking this question too, will there be retail bakers, right?
Right.
The problem is not that people don't want to go into their own business and open up a bakery and show what they can do and make a living at it. It is the occupancy cost, the rent.
Right.
That is demanded today to pay for, you know, for a facility. And it is so prohibitive for many, in the baking industry. Your rent factor can only be as high as I'm sure that you know.
Yeah.
Rent is too high. If your overheads are too high, you're not going to make money. And, you know, just for the love of baking, I don't think people are opening up a business, right?
Right. No, so, exactly.
But where I really see still a potential is the niche marketing. You cannot be everything to everybody like we used to be, like that we have the whole variety, everything from cookies to wedding cakes to you name it, you know, right. Where we over 200 products in a small bakery. I don't think that is working quite as well. And I think if the formula for the bread baker's guild of America in the States as an example, where a lot of the artisan bakers covered a wonderful niche for themselves and where artisan breads will still have a great following.
Right.
So my biggest learning curve was when I visited a baker in Kansas City on my way to the American Institute of Baking, and I was giving a presentation. He asked if I could spend a couple of days with him, which I did.
Right.
He was a member of the Pipe Bakers Guild and not a baker from way back when. He just had learned some basic skills and had a nice mixer, a wood-fired oven, which they wouldn't allow him to use.
Right.
So he had to heat it with heat lamps. And he became a little bit of my hero, not because he was the greatest baker I ever met. He made about 6 or 7 different types of bread.
Right.
All hand-shaped. And he, believe it or not, he made between 250 and 300 loaves of bread a day.
Okay.
And he sold these at $5 to $6 a piece.
Right.
He probably made his net income probably was, he paid very little for help or his rent was very cheap. By the time he deducted all of his payments and all of this, He cleared himself about between $15,000 and $18,000 a month.
Oh my goodness.
He only worked. He was only open Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Yeah.
So, and I thought, my hat off to this guy. You know, so simple. He made nice looking breads.
Yeah.
And so the niche marketing is the key.
Right.
You know, you have to do something. You have to do it well. Don't get caught on, well, we should incorporate this, you know, like where you see some of these big fast food companies like Tim Hortons, McDonald's, they're adding more and more things too to their palate, right?
Yeah.
And I guess that is maybe important for them, but in baking, I believe niche marketing is the key.
Right, right. Yeah, pick one thing and do it well. Yeah. Well, and the people that like, and it just seems in the last month or so, the people that I've been talking to more and more are really focusing on their overheads and their rent as well. Right. Like if, you know, mm-hmm. there are guys getting smaller just to reduce the rents or, you know, converting a garage on a lot that they own. Just and eliminating rents altogether, you know, and doing what they can that way. Because, well, I know that even in my own experience, like after 5 years, my landlord wanted to raise the rents by 30%, and that was going to take changes the whole equation of your business when that happens.
Absolutely,
you know,
and that works for a landlord, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's exactly it. You know, the trend has been if you can, you know, somehow own your building, you're in a much better position for sure. But yeah, because at least you've got a building you can sell if you have to. But
But you know, rent factor is such a great thing. Last year I set up a cookie company for somebody in Edmonton.
Okay.
We were looking for a niche market and they had contemplated different avenues, and I told them that the skill level was too high for them and it was just too generic. So I suggested, you know, specialized cookies like European Swiss type of cookies might just resonate, and we test bake them in their home, in my home, and had a focus group taste them, and they all were enthusiastic. So we set up this business in Edmonton. I purchased the equipment and set it up and trained these people.
Right.
And so there's about 40 cookies.
Okay.
Not to eliminate the chocolate chip peanut butter cookies, but the focus was on different type of cookies.
Sure. Yeah, for sure. And,
so now they've been in business for a year. We don't talk as often because it is just the wife that runs the business and the husband is in the oil industry. So it's not a husband-wife operation. But, you know, when you see 40 different types of cookies in a showcase, it's very impressive.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And just making cookies. Just, you know, not competing against Cookies by George.
They have
their market. Don't go into that market.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's sort of like it can be the new cupcake niche, right? You know, like that's the, more to, as an alternative to that.
And they found a very good marketing company. So they sell their products online, you know, they branded them pretty good. So yeah, I have to follow up on this and see how they're doing.
Yeah. Well, and that, you know, and that's the other thing. I was talking with a fella a couple months ago down in Mississippi, and he got into making crackers because he was in a small town and he was making good bread, but there was you're trying to bake fresh every day, and the way that the people were coming through a shop, he said he really needed something that could sit a couple of days or that he could ship, you know. And he started making these sourdough crackers and using spent grains from beer and stuff, and he said, well, now I've got a thing that tastes great, but I can I can market it differently, and I can ship it, and I can, it'll keep in a nice bag for a couple of days or whatever. And he, it sort of changed the whole way he thought about his business by making that switch, you know? So it makes a lot of sense to think of it that way, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
And today you really have to specialize. That's a good location, I know, but it doesn't have to be big.
Right.
And location still matters a great deal. You can have the best products. People are just not too interested in traveling great distance. And if you can piggyback in a good location, and even if you have to produce off site, that might be the thing. So, but yeah, there's still good opportunities. I totally believe that.
Yeah, good. Well, and my assumption is that when you're in the pastry schools like at Sate, you know, those are also the kinds of things that you're talking to the students about, in addition to just how to make the products, eh? It's getting them so they're trying to think strategically about what they're going to do with these skills.
True.
Yeah.
Well, there's one component called bakery management, and it's basically they have to set up a business from scratch, and so they learn all of the wonderful the wonderful pains that you go through,
right?
And negotiating a lease, paying for the lease, and trying to make good and sure that your business is viable.
Right. Now,
on paper, we can make a lot of things work, right?
Yep.
So, but it is just an eye-opening experience, you know, as to how to cost your products. And the students learn this on everything. All of their products that they're making, they have to cost them.
Right.
And so they also have to somehow find a formula of a selling price. And so we have different formulas for this too.
Right.
But you can't just do it for the love of it. You have to, some people think profit is a dirty word. Well, without profit, you're not going to survive.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The term that always got me, like whenever you're in a class, is they're always trying to teach you about cash flow. And I learned cash flow very quickly once I opened. It's like that was very easy watching the busier we got, sometimes the smaller the bank balance got. And I was like, what's going on here?
So, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
One more good day and I'll be broke. So, that's great. So, well, it's just kind of, it's remarkable to me to learn more about, you know, the whole time, from the old apprentice system that you did when you were in Germany to sort of like the new apprentice system that they've got in Canada now and that you helped establish is so cool. Plus in the middle, actually owning and running your own place. So one more question, I guess, that I had about this, the current education or the situation at Sate, is that do you see the number of people trying to get into pastry programs growing these days? Like, is it getting bigger, or is it just kind of holding its own?
Well, the question is really good, because about 6 years ago we had opportunities for 48 students to enter the baking pastry program.
Right.
And 6 years ago, there were 300 applicants for those 40. So then Sate decided to increase the number to 60. And so that helped somewhat. And now the program is up to 84 students, and there's over 500 applicants.
My goodness. Wow.
People want to get into the program. And so how are they being selected?
Right.
Well, first of all, I think they have to have their tuition fees. They have to have, the high school transcripts.
Right.
Okay. So once these are in place, then you have to look at the total situation. And from that, from 500 people, you would be able to reduce it down to 350, you know, on if they don't have all of the prerequisites.
Right.
But just imagine, after 350, they're being shortlisted, then, and maybe 200 of them will have interviews.
Right.
And from the interviews, you can see whether somebody's passionate and has a fire in the belly or not. So, and that's a panel, and they really look at for the success, because what, you know, with so many applicants, it would be a shame that if one student came in and saying, well, I just want to take general studies, right, or something.
Right, yeah, 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 so yeah.
They're wasting a seat or a place in the school or drop out with their... You know, you try not just to look at retention, but, you know, you want to make sure that your classes stay full, because there was such a demand. If somebody drops out, that's really not very good.
Right.
So based on that, you get about 84 students with a backup in case somebody doesn't make it after all. So, yeah, the demand is actually growing.
Wow. Yeah. And
so, this, and it's a 2-year program now. It has been for quite some time.
Right.
And so the opportunities for students have also grown. A lot of these students with their pastry skills, they go on to cruise ships, they go to international hotels, and, you know, not just in Canada, but...
Right, all over, yeah.
Europe and United States. So, and I don't have the latest number, but the job offerings for, I think 95% of the students will have jobs.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, because that's what I wanted to ask you, is that is the job market able to support all those students? But it sounds like it is.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the measures that they're looking at. You know, is their employability.
Sure, sure. Yeah, because you know, knowing that you, you know, when you get out of the program, there's still lots to learn and lots of experiences to get. But it's you'd hate to have to, you know, go work a desk job for a couple of years trying to find something, if you know what I mean, right? Like it's...
And there's no guarantee that all of them will stay in the business. You know?
Sure.
Some of them, after 2 or 3 years, if they think that's either too hard, or I've seen some students move into different industries, et cetera, but they proudly still talk about their experience, so that's good.
Sure, absolutely, absolutely. No, that's great. Well, and yeah, it's so funny, because you know, there's no illusions. It's a lot of work, and it's a tough career path for sure. But there's an awful lot of it can be very rewarding as well, and a very positive way of making your living, for sure. So,
oh, absolutely, yeah. You know, while they're in school, you know, they really have to work fairly, yeah, fairly hard too, and
yeah,
and quite obviously, many of them, not all of them, but many of them have part-time jobs to supplement, you know, because the tuition fees are not that low, right?
So, right, for sure.
So, but after graduation, you know, the bank of mom and dad is closing. And so they have to make sure that they have a meaningful income.
That's right. That's right. Got to make the rent.
So, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, that's awesome. Well, yeah. And it's, you know, it's, And I know you've been, you've in the past, at least you've been teaching other classes, like through the Bread Bakers Guild. And I still remember I owe you a beer from Wheatstock back in 2012 there when.
And I've been so thirsty lately.
Pardon me?
And I've been so thirsty.
Oh, lately. No. I know. Yeah.
I'm just kidding. Terrible.
Yeah. Sorry. I'm really sorry about Germany this go around at the World Cup, but.
it's not like. I was in Europe a few weeks ago for three weeks in different cities like Budapest, Prague, Vienna, Warsaw, Krakow, Berlin. And I'm looking at the bakeries there. And let me tell you, the bakeries there, they have always been flourishing and they're still flourishing like you wouldn't believe.
Oh, that's great.
Many of them had gone to where big plants produce the products and ship it to retail outlets, but I've seen a lot more resurgence of where people bake on premise.
And, oh, nice.
And so, yeah, and it's totally amazing.
Yeah. I've got to get out that way. My wife and I went to Europe a couple of years ago, but we were more in the Spain and Italy areas, which was fascinating in its own way. But I've heard so many nice things about Poland and the Czech Republic and Austria is a place to go check out. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, the pastries and the breads and just everything is so amazing. I mean, you know, for years we've been making soccer torch here and teaching to our students. Finally, I sat in the hotel soccer to have my cake and cappuccino, probably paid three times the price what I could get it for elsewhere, but I wanted to have the experience and just to realize that's exactly the cake we were making here in Calgary too.
So. Oh, that's great. Hold on. Well, that's good.
It was no different. I thought there was going to be some big explosion, like bubbles in my in my head, you know, like in a Ratatouille movie.
That's right.
But no, it was the same cake, and you know, and one has to appreciate that in Europe, the cakes are not flavored nearly as strong,
right,
in North America. So you just about have to look for some flavor there. You have to eat the cake with a lot more looking for it, right? So yeah. It's different. Yeah. We might overflavor here a little bit, but the bakeries were just amazing. I have to say they were beautiful.
No, that's great to hear. That's good. That it's also encouraging, right? Like it's sort of, you know, I'm hopeful for good bakeries wherever I'm able to travel for sure. So
yeah,
that's awesome. Well, thank you so much, Volker. It's just been so nice to see you again and to talk to you again. And I know I've mentioned it before, but the couple days that we worked together in I think it was 2008 at that German baking course in Calgary, it still to this day has a really big impact on me. And I make one of the rye breads pretty much every week, even now. That you taught me in that class. I still call it Volker's Rye. I now have two people that come that are named Volker, and they're always like, their wives are like, well, what, you don't even know this guy. Why did you name it after him? I said, no, it's a different Volker. And then I tell the story of when I met Volker Baumann out in Calgary and he taught me the Kessler Rye. So I appreciate that. And I just appreciate everything that you've done over a long period of time to kind of promote good baking and teaching bakers and teaching pastry people and really moving the yardsticks of what we're doing in Canada and in Western Canada. So thank you so much for that. It's been great. It's one of the very lucky friendships that I've been able to form with my little journey in baking. So I really appreciate that.
Well, it goes both ways. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and good luck with the golfing this year. And I will get out to Calgary. And when I get out to Calgary, I'll look you up and I'll finally buy you that beer from the Euros.
Okay.
All right. Okay. You have a great day. It's so nice to see you again and to talk with you again.
Likewise, Mark.
Okay. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Well, and there you have it. Like I said, he's a great guy. I'm so happy that he's enjoying his retirement, and it sounds like he's still quite involved from time to time in the program at SAIT. He deserves many, many good things for all of the bakers that he's trained and the people he's inspired, including myself. I'm just the luckiest guy to be able to count him as a friend and as an inspirational person that I've met. So I hope you enjoyed the show this week. As always, if you want to help me out, the best thing you can do is tell all your friends about this show, either by leaving a review, forwarding links, friending me up on Instagram and sharing stuff all over, whatever it takes. The more people that listen to this, the more inspiration I get to keep making them. And the more we build a little community of bakers and bakery owners here. So, enjoy your week. Very happy baking, and I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.